Morning, everybody. I have to get my props. I have props today. You're in for a little something different. So first, I want to say, Barry, thank you, because that's not what I selected. And I don't know what I did, but that was not what I selected. Yeah, the call to worship. So I said to myself, I took a minute and I went back here. I'm like, that's just not right. So I went back and I found what I was supposed to have sent and should have been read. So what I would like to do is just read it for you real quick, okay? Barry, sorry, but thank you. You did a great job. I look at it this way. The NFL starts today, Rock. I wasn't going to do a football analogy, but dear, I'm sorry. I got to do one. 16 years I played quarterback. I threw interceptions. No one ever scored, though. So, Satan, you might have intercepted me on this one, but you're not scoring. I'm going to win. So here's what was supposed to be in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. For you yourselves know, brothers, that our coming to you was not in vain. But though we had already suffered and been shamefully treated at Philippi, as you know, we had boldness in our God to declare to you the gospel of God in the midst of such conflict. For our appeal does not spring from error or impurity or any attempt to deceive, but just as we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, so we speak not to please man, but to please God who tests our hearts. And that's kind of where I'm going today. I'm talking about your heart, okay? Because it does get tested, does it not? Okay. So, I don't know about you, but I really enjoy a good story. And even more so, I love a story that has a great voice attached to it. Just, you know, I've always enjoyed listening and watching and observing sports. And a great storyteller, I mean, a sporting event is a story. A great storyteller helps all of that to unfold in a way that makes it very vivid, and you remember it, and, you know, it sticks with you for a long time. So, for those of you that don't know, this is called a radio. This used to sit on the counter in the kitchen of my house when I was a little kid. This was my mother's. And you might think, well, what in the world are you still doing with that piece of junk? Awesome. Well, that's what my wife says. But I can tell you, I heard a lot of simple things on this radio, like school's canceled, it's snowing. Yay! But one of my favorite announcers of all time was Mike Lang of the Pittsburgh Penguins. I've been a hockey fan since I was real small. I used to sit in the kitchen by that counter where this radio sat in a chair, and I would listen to the games on the radio. Because when they were at home back then, that's how old I am, you couldn't watch it on TV. It wasn't on TV. So I would sit and listen. And I would get the painting and the imagery in my mind from the description of the words that Mike Lang would use. And he was excellent at doing such a vivid job of letting you know what was going on. So that's my radio. Another person that I really like to listen to is author, historian, narrator David McCullough, if you know who he is. He's written lots of books about presidents. He wrote 1776. Which, if you haven't read it, I would highly encourage you to do so. It's an excellent book. And he's from Western PA. He's from right down near Pittsburgh in a place called Greenfield. His voice has been described as mellifluous. Mellifluous, which means smooth, rich flow. Comes from two Latin words. It means to flow like honey. Now, if you've never heard the man speak, I would encourage you to YouTube him and Just listen to him. Ken Burns did a Civil War series years ago in the late 80s, I believe it was. And David McCullough does a good bit of narration in there, along with some other people who have tremendous voices. And he does an excellent job. He just makes you feel like you're sitting there in the midst of the battle and experiencing it at the moment. I would listen to the guy read me a menu. That's how much I enjoy his voice. So, stories are wonderful. Let me tell you one. So, about a month ago, Judy was at her mother's. Our daughter was over with the grandkids and the dog because our son-in-law was in Africa on a missions trip. My wife was wonderful. She had everything ready for dinner. All we had to do was put it on the table because she was going to be at her mother's late. So Jen and I were taking care of the girls and getting dinner. Daughter Jen had everything on the table. We're all ready to eat. She says, "Dad, can you do me a favor and reach into the fridge and get the ranch dressing?" I said, "Sure." Now, it's important for me to tell you at this point that when I'm hungry, I drop stuff frequently. I don't know. I just do. So I opened the refrigerator door, got the ranch dressing, which is it's the same size as this one. But this one has a screw-on lid. It would have been much better if I had had this one that night. But I didn't. I had the one where you push down and it snaps on top. And I dropped it. It had 16 ounces of freshly made ranch dressing in it. So imagine that the podium here is the fridge, and I'm standing right here. I can't tell you how I dropped it. I still don't know what I did. I have no idea. All I know is this. It left my hand, hit the floor, and the best word I can tell you to describe what happened is it reverberated. If you know what that means. It hit at the perfect angle that the seal on here came completely loose, and ranch dressing went everywhere. I had it on me. It was on the handles of the fridge. It made it to the top of the fridge to all the snacks on the bags. It was in the rubber seals. You know how the rubber seals close, and you got that teeny tiny crack? It was in the majority of those. It had gone onto the carpet. It landed on the dog. It was on the kitchen floor. And my daughter could not stop laughing at me. I had on my glasses. She laughed for probably the whole time we cleaned it up. So we're getting it all cleaned up so we can eat. I got paper towels there. Now, Judy's not home. So we got paper towels everywhere. We're wiping all this stuff up. I'm getting it done. And then I looked up. There must have been 10 of the 16 ounces on the ceiling. I said, "Jen, you got to be kidding me. We thought we were done," because I hadn't looked up at all. So I had to go downstairs, get my mini ladder, stand on that, clean the ceiling. I'd never seen, nor have I ever made, quite such a mess, but I did it right. So I figured when Judy got home, I better tell her, because if I didn't, the grandkids would. "You should see what Pop did." So we had an interesting story to tell. So having been a teacher, I've always enjoyed the art of instruction, and to me, that's exactly what it is. A lot of instruction and teaching is an art. There's certainly scientific aspects to it, but the key to quality instruction is understanding the art of how to deliver what is in need of learning. Quality instruction demands a variety of techniques and strategies. Learning has never, ever, ever been one size fits all. Acquisition rate on the part of the learner varies from person to person. How you handle a lack of acquisition related to learning says a lot about how you need to deliver your instruction. If they're not getting it, then you've got to change something. Master teachers adapt to suit for purpose. I used to coach golf. My last prop. There's my golf ball. One day I went to golf practice, and our kids, you know, they want to get better. I said, all right, here's what you're going to do today. You're going to play 9 holes. You get 3 clubs. You're allowed to have 14 in your bag. I said, you get 3 clubs, you're not allowed to take your driver. What? Not allowed to take your driver. Pick 3 other clubs. I don't care which ones you pick. So, you know, the 5 or 6 kids I had that day, they went and they played 9 holes. We're adding up our scores at the end. And I kept quiet. And I hear one of them say, I didn't shoot any different than what I have, you know, any other time. So I, did you learn anything? No. Well, you're supposed to. So it's not about your driver. Okay? It's not it. It's about the chipping and the putting. Doesn't matter how far you hit it, if you don't chip and putt, you're not going to score. And it changed the way they looked at the game and their own game and how to play. Made them aware of something of that they were not aware of. An important part of learning is listening, which I've talked about before in the past. Listening as opposed to hearing. That listening should provoke us to ponder, think, analyze, synthesize, and above all things, conclude. Now, we read the parable of the sower this morning, which they didn't get it, did they? Because as soon as he was done with the parable, what did the disciples say? Why do you speak in parables, Jesus? Why? We don't get it. Well, Jesus used parables as a manner of teaching, to get a point across. Sometimes that was a moral truth. Sometimes it was a spiritual truth that was illustrated with an analogy that was related to their everyday experience. An analogy is a comparison of things based on those things because they're alike in some way. I'm sure most everybody knows that, but let's play anyway. So dog is to puppy as cat is to... There we go. Not hard. Bees are to a hive as a bear is to a cave or a den. Sure. Short is the light as long as to... Heavy. Right. I heard it somewhere. Yeah, there are things like similes and metaphors as well. You know, we say sometimes that people are stubborn as mules. If somebody can't see, they're blind as a bat. You know, we've heard those things many times. And Jesus used analogies to teach. So the disciples asked Jesus why he spoke in parables. The parable he had just stated was hard for them to understand. Well, why was that? Is Jesus trying to hide something? Or is he doing this to make sure that there's some kind of revelation? And he said to them, you already know the secrets, but they, meaning the crowd of unbelievers, they do not. Well, one of the things he wanted to get at is that not all hearts are ready to hear the truth. They're not. Seeking hearts, if you have a seeking heart, then the parable is going to reveal something to you. It's going to lead to growth. The seed is planted in the soil. Humble people have ears to hear. Parables lead to new understanding. If your heart is closed and not ready to hear and listen, then that growth gets stunted. Jesus quotes Isaiah saying, you will be ever hearing and never understanding, ever seeing but never perceiving. To them, a parable is a stumbling block. Preconceived ideas keep them from opening up and block their ability to learn true meaning. Often Jesus' parables are really unforgettable. They use imagery, have a relatable description, and contain many things that are relatable through all time. I mean, look, we're still talking about them here today. A sower, seed, soil, a prodigal son, a father running to a son, they become anchors by which we learn deep truths if the heart is in the proper place. They're engaging. The stories invite listeners. You're not passively receiving the information. They actively participate. Listeners have to ask, on what soil do I fall? Am I on good soil? Am I on thorny ground? Am I among the rocks? Did I fall along the path? Jesus explains the meaning of each of those. The seed that falls along the path, he says, is like those who hear, but they don't understand the word. Probably part of the reason they don't understand is because their heart is not in the right place. It might be lukewarm. He says also some seed falls on the rocky place. Like those with no root, it's short-lived. I can think of people right now that at some point in time have fallen into that category. And you know why? Because when they came to faith, it was a highly emotional decision, and they never adapted. It was always about emotion. There was no steadiness. They weren't rooted deep enough. And in many ways, it cost them. Jesus talks about it right here, right now. He says, seed and thorns, like those choked out by weeds. Who do you surround yourself with? Who's around you on a daily basis? Who's talking with you? Who's encouraging you? Who's keeping you accountable? Helping you stay on the straight and narrow? Because that's hard, right? It's hard. And the seed on the good soil, like those who produce a bountiful crop. I've read this many times. I find it really interesting that Jesus doesn't tell any of them where they fall. You know, he doesn't point people out. He doesn't say, well, I know that you've been in the rocky place, and here's what you need to do. But he doesn't tell them that. He wants their hearts to be in the right place so that they understand. That's our job. That's our responsibility. It's up to us to go where? Right here. If we read this with high frequency, you'll get the wisdom. You may not always get it when you want it, but you will get it. That's promised. But it's work, and it's hard, but it's worth it. The life is worth it. If our heart is right, we will see, we will understand. The parable should provoke us to think, ponder, and ask, again, well, where am I? How can I get better? Do I understand? If I don't, maybe I should read it again. You ever have to read something twice? Three times? Four? I don't get this, dear. Explain it to me. That's why I have my wife. Right? Sometimes you read stuff multiple times and it just doesn't sink in. It's hard. What makes sense to someone else may not make sense to you. Can I convey this to someone else, such as Jesus did? How can I lovingly help someone else along their path with wherever they may be? So it's our responsibility to work, to stay right with the Lord, to read, study, pray, and apply what we learn. I'm telling you, where is it? Oh, it's in my pocket. This thing's not important to me, so I don't really care where it is. I'm telling you, when I was back there for a brief moment, and you guys were in here singing, and I was trying to find what I was supposed to give to Barry, I could feel it. You know what I could feel? Satan almost saying, you can't find it. You're not going to find it. I'm telling you, as sure as I stand here. And I'm saying, oh yeah? I'm going to find it. You just wait and see. I will find it because I know where it is. And I know the intent and purpose. If you remember a little while ago, in verse 10, the disciples asked, "Why do you speak in parables?" to Jesus. That's a great question. Even better one from them, because it displays a deep desire to learn. The parable becomes a test of the heart, and revealed is who was truly seeking God by following Jesus. Jesus quotes Isaiah 6, 9 through 10. He says this, "You will be ever hearing, but never understanding. You'll be ever seeing, but never perceiving. For this people's heart has become calloused. They hardly hear with their ears, and they have closed their eyes. Otherwise, they might see with their eyes, hear with their ears, understand with their hearts, and turn, and I would heal them." It's good stuff. So there's a call for a deeper relationship. You know, Jesus isn't just out teaching class here. He's trying to convince the disciples of one major significant thing. Follow me. Follow me. With part of yourself? No. Some of yourself? No. All of yourself. I need all of you. It's our responsibility to listen and to learn. It's our responsibility to read and to learn. It's our responsibility to pray, fellowship, and learn. It's our responsibility to follow and learn.